Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people will turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom. Through all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream at that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, it's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to abbitumi.com/timeforanawakening. That's abbitumi.com/timeforanawakening. They broadcast out of Ghana and catch the live stream there. Or you can download the TuneIn radio app to any of your devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon. And you can stream the program live, even into your car if you had the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. It's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening media is also there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening media, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace in our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things placed in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:07 here in the city of Philadelphia on this Sunday evening edition of Time for an Awakening. We'll get into a little open topics a little later on in the program. Our first guest this evening, though, will be activists and organizers of the Ijima People's Progress Party in Baltimore, Maryland. Brother Nnamdi Lumumba will be joining us to talk about the third conference of the Ijima People's Progress Party to be held in Baltimore on April the 23rd. And we'll get into what's going on and how people can get involved. And we'll get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-a. All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening at 7:12 here in the city of Philadelphia. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. What about yourself?
Everything's good. The weather's starting to change a little bit, although the temperature dipped down a little bit cooler today, Richard, but the needle is heading in your direction, so everything is good.
Yes, it definitely did, but, you know, it's a good thing that we're having Brother Namdi on, you know, to talk about the party having this convention, looking at the state politics and what we need to do to organize. So I'm looking forward to the dialogue and the update.
You know, we've had these conversations in the past with Brother Namdi, Brother Brandon, and other Black independent political formations. Ujima just happens to be the first black workers-led formation. But these things are necessary, Richard, because if things happen with this system, and you can see that this system is not on upswing, it's on the downswing, it's clear. Mm. If we're thrust into a situation where we need leadership, everybody can't be their own leader. That's chaos. You need organized leadership that works in the interest of the masses of our people, not the 1%, not bourgeois. You need that's European or Euro style leadership. You need leadership that's going to work in the interest of the masses of our people and organized leadership. So all of the credit is given to people like Brother Namdi, Brother Brandon, and others that have in their mind, we need to start developing and cultivating this leadership now from amongst the people so we can be prepared to move our people forward. I might be wrong, Richard, but I think that's how we move our people forward, by preparing for these things, right, preparing for the eventual outcomes, preparing to lead our people into uncharted territory. Look at some of the things that have happened over the recent years. When they went in there, NATO forces and European and American forces, and destabilized Libya, for example, and killed the leader of the country, Muammar Gaddafi, they plunged that country into utter chaos. A lot of our people were being forced into slavery and other things because the country was in chaos. Leadership wasn't prepared to step forward, and leadership was destabilized. So, you know, I'm just using that as an example of our people preparing to move our people forward. And I give all the credit to Brother Namdi, Brother Brandon, and others that are out there developing leadership from among the people that's going to work in the interest of the people. Joining us in the, and you know, I guess later on in the program, we'll kind of throw around some topics in open forum. But first, I want to introduce activist organizer of the Ujima's People Progress Party, Brother Namdi Lumumba, is with us in conversation. Brother Namdi, how are you, sir?
I'm good, brother. Can you hear me?
You're great. Glad to have you back on Time for an Awakening with myself and Brother Richard.
Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, I just want to thank you both for allowing us to come on the program once again. Really enjoy the quality of the work you put out and the discussions that you have. So really appreciate you squeezing us in.
Brother Namdi, talk about the third statewide conference coming up, because it's a lot of things are going to be covered. We'll kind of do a little thumbnail sketch tonight, being that you're going to be on with us. But talk about the areas of need. A lot of our people should know these things. But just talk about it from your perspective, the areas of need, some of the things that have been accomplished since you and Brother Brandon and others have started out on this organizing venture. Just kind of give us a little background and discussion on what has transpired.
Absolutely. So, I mean, this work has really been, and it's really been 10 years now, and we've had a chance to participate in the electoral process. We've had far more opportunities to participate in community-wide struggles, institution building. The model that we would like to see for a Black workers-led party, electoral party, doesn't wait 2 years or 4 years to run candidates. It's engaged in like regular, everyday community struggle for power over our own Black lives, pushing back the police, pushing back gentrification, fighting for education, fighting for the human rights of our community. There are so many ways in which our people are under attack, especially working class people in our community are constantly under attack, that waiting to teach our people to wait 2 years or 4 years for some elected official to solve our problems would be a crime. And unfortunately, it's what dominates the politics of today, is that people are told that this is the most, every election cycle is the most important election of our lifetime, right? But yet all the problems, all the contradictions that happened before the election just stay. And coming out of the COVID crisis, you see now a war in Eastern Europe. the crisis itself in the world situation has deepened. And as white power and capitalism shifts all its resources there, the meager resources that usually don't even do enough for our community is now going to be shift even more, you know, out of the reach of our people who need it. So now is definitely the time that we would have our third conference, coming off of like a real deep understanding of the problem, right? I think when we talked about this several years before with you, I don't think most people disagree that there should be a Black Independent Party. The assumption is that it's something that should have been done and should be easy. And the fact is if, as you look around this country, finding at the state level a genuine Black political party is impossible. It does not exist. And it's not so much that it can't be done, but the truth is that we don't have the expertise and the experience, right, of knowing what it actually takes materially to do it. It's great to have good ideas. It's great to have people rooting for you, but the actual ability, the know-how and the connections to do it is something that we've taken far longer than we thought we would to prepare ourselves, right? So it's a struggle. And luckily, we're not alone. There are people all over this country. There are Black organizers of political parties all over this country who are working with us to try to figure it out. So, you know, I think it's going to be a breakthrough for us this year, and hopefully other organizations that we're working with soon be coming along.
Brother Nandi, talk about the 23rd of April is the third statewide conference.
Yes.
I remember when we talked before, the fight was trying to get Ujima put on the ballots in a lot of these the cities in Maryland, Baltimore, and some of the other places. How has that fight materialized? Can the people going in write in just say if a candidate from the party, or how is that fight coming along?
Sure. Yeah, so we're doing our third, like I said, our third conference. We're actually going to do it in Prince George's County, which is, even though Baltimore City has the largest Black population, Prince George's County actually has the largest county-wide number of Black people in the state. So it's actually larger number in percentage in PG County. So we have been, like, to be honest, off and on with this question about whether or not getting somebody on a ballot would be the best thing for us to do.
Mm-hmm.
We've never given up the idea of being a political party. The question is, how would that look? So unlike Pennsylvania, which actually every in this, I would advise anyone who's listening, understand the laws in your state. It's not uniform, right? Which is another reason why it's difficult, right? Expertise gained in one part of the country doesn't always translate to expertise somewhere else. In Pennsylvania, you're able to have a municipal wide county party, right? So if you have a county there, you can do what it takes to get on the county register. People can register to vote there, and you can run candidates in that county. Very simple. It is not like that in Maryland. They won't allow us to do it at a municipal level. They have to require it at a state level. What we've done in the past is used, because we've refused to run as Democrats or as Republicans, we've used the independent tactic, which only requires us to get 1% of the electorate whatever seat you're running for. You need to get 1% of the of registered voters to sign a petition, and that's worked out for us in the past. The one contradiction with that, obviously, for us is that it does not allow us, one, to put Ujima's name out there consistently, because when you're running a candidate, they just say independent, right? But the other is the reason why we wanted to create the party statewide is because we want thousands of people to join our party. Maryland is in a situation where 20% of the voting population already has opted out of the Democratic and Republican Party, right? And so that's a lot of people. And we don't have to get all 20%. But if we can get a significant number of that percentage, that's literally thousands of people who can join our party. And as I said, in between elections, that is a database that we can contact to let them know we're doing demonstrations, fundraisers, building institutions, doing outreach, right? That is a real tangible connection that we could have to, you know, not just at the state level, but at the county level, right? At the city level, we would know what people are registered in our party, you know, in every district. And we can move to mobilize those people to have a real, you know, political education, to have a real relationship to Black institutions that we're building. That's what we really want to achieve, attaining state ballot access. And then from there, we would have a base to really run serious candidates to struggle right around real questions that we have in our community.
Brother Nnamdi, before I pass it over to your Brother Richard and talk about some of the things that might be covered in the convention, let me ask you a question, and I'll relate it to one of our guests from last week's program. We had the vice mayor and one of the community organizers from Mason, Tennessee on last week. The town is under assault by a lot of the white leadership in Tennessee.
Yes.
They want them to tear up their charter. I think they've been in existence over 100 and something years, 120 years, and they're coming against them. Now, the organizer said that for decades they had been under white leadership, and one or two particular white families had ran that town for a number of decades. But he said in 2015 they established a underground railroad, as he termed it, and started developing candidates from among the community. He said a lot of them didn't have any experience running government, but they were honest people chosen from among the community to run for these seats. And when they did that, they took control politically of the town. He said his challenge was going about in the community and convincing the people that they can do this. Because he said, he mentioned to me, well, you know, in these, a lot of these southern towns, it's hard to convince our people that they can fight. But I told him that's not just limited to southern towns. Talk about it from your perspective of going around door to door, talking to people in Baltimore and other areas about them organizing themselves to form leadership, the challenges and the responses.
Yeah. Well, what we've done is that we've learned to have that conversation, right? That, again, one of the strengths of being consistent, like over this time, is that people, Black folks have been conditioned, obviously, to be strong supporters of the Democratic Party, even if we ourselves often don't trust the electoral process always. To get people to do something outside of that, especially for older folks, is a little difficult. What we found is that the leadership questions have to be asked in a different way. When we look at what's happening in our community, whether it's around, for instance, in my neighborhood, we have a community garden, right? We don't go around saying that the community garden is a leadership development project, right? What we say is that we're going to fund it ourselves, that we're, the food that we grow organically, we'll pass out to the neighbors in the community. We put it on the doors for them. We sell some of it at community farmers markets. We're able to use that garden space for community events. We're able to articulate it in a way in which the leadership, it being involved in the process of solving a problem around food sovereignty, helps develop leaders, right? I think what we have to realize is that this system has done everything it can to our brains to make us believe that we as individuals and as a group can't be leaders, right? Leaders are somehow somebody special, somebody well-educated, somebody well-connected, someone who speaks well, whatever it is, right? That's how we've been taught. And the truth is our history is littered with leaders who were unexpected leaders. You know, Fannie Lou Hamer, Malcolm X, you know what I mean? Gloria Richardson here in Maryland, who just transitioned. These weren't people who, if you had looked at them years before, they weren't people who anybody would have expected to be a leader. But a crisis and an opportunity created the vacuum. And in that fight, you know, fight for a resistance, leadership was developed. The thing that we say is that building the political party that we're talking about is indeed an institution to do that all the time. One of the most consistent things that we have done over those 10 years has produced political education, right? Political education. And before the shutdown came, we had started moving towards doing civics education, which, you know, when I grew up, civics was something that was in school, right? You were introduced to how government works and how things supposedly work by definition, but those things are gone. And so we were working on a project. We were literally in the first round of it where we was on a campus having people come in learning civics. We want to go back out into the community and teach people that it's not just a question of civics, but how does understanding government serve us, right? That's the process that we have to really be engaged in as organizers, that people will become leaders if there's a need for leaders, right? But we don't have to go around hitting them over the head and say, well, you're going to become a leader after you do this process, right? What we're trying to do is solve a problem, and that solving the problem develops leaders all over the place.
Brother Richard, jump in here. I know you probably want to talk about some things before we kind of get into what's going on at the convention.
But what I'll do is, in light of this, is ask you, Brother Nambi, if it's a fair question. You know, this is your third year of holding the convention. And as Elliot said, we'll get into what the convention topics will be. Over from a organizing perspective, a political organizing perspective, could you, you know, share with us, and you kind of touched on it already, like some of the successes from last year convention to this year convention in relationship that you're bringing to show, you know, us, you know, Time for Awakening audience, how developments you mentioned about, you know, the time that is not a quick thing, you know, it takes time. So over this year, have you made an assessment of the victories that you've had as you go into this conference?
Yes. And some of the in the panels themselves actually kind of reflect some of the strengths that we've developed over the period of time. We don't do our conventions every year. We do them every 3 years. And 2019 was actually 2020, excuse me, was supposed to be our previous convention. Obviously we all know what happened in the world, but over that 2020, 2021 time, what came out of that work was we were able to really get plugged in to the whole food sovereignty question. I think obviously in major cities like this, Baltimore has food deserts all over the place. And during the lockdown, what we saw was that communities where transportation wasn't accessible, nor were local grocery stores, trying to figure out the logistics of getting food, PPE, sanitation products to communities was one of the big challenges for the city and for organizers. So that was something that we really came into our own with. We were able to build a very broad coalition of supporters throughout the city. It's been something that even though the food sovereignty, even the question of food sovereignty hasn't changed, but the immediacy of having access to healthy food has kind of relaxed, obviously, now with people being able to go back shopping. But we've been able to continue relationships with getting PPE materials to people, testing kits as we need because of the relationships we built. We've been able to recruit a lot of people who were initially just interested in that because of the political education, getting them deeper involved with that question. That also has led us to be involved with housing advocates struggles. And at the conference, we'll be having advocates who were doing political work throughout the state who've connected with us, the kind of support that we've been giving them, building tenant associations, which has been a big advancement. Unfortunately, you know, when you have either the city or slumlords with these apartments, they take advantage of our people. Being able to get into those places and, you know, over time, being able to win people over to understanding why you should have a tenant association has been huge. So that's one of the big wins for us as well. I talked about the garden program that we have in my community, but we actually launched the ability to do potted plants, right? So that folks would have sustainable food items, tomatoes, peppers, onions, things that you could pick throughout a season to help supplement food sources. That was a success that we were able to launch. And a lot of it was actually named on behalf of Gloria Richardson before she transitioned. So it was really special to us to be able to kind of build that on the year she transitioned as well. There's going to be some other discussions building labor relationships. One of the key speakers at this conference is in the labor. She is a UGMA member. She is also the president of the Baltimore Teachers Union. She ran and won the election when no one expected her to win. She was a part of a whole core of organizers who were radicals who came into power, and she's still there. She's actually gearing up for her second term, so she's got an election coming up. So there have been some victories for us. It feels more like just for us continuous work to kind of develop and branch out. And what we've tried to do is not necessarily always start institutions in our own name, but being able to deploy activists and organizers and recruit activists and organizers to support other people's work. And that's kind of grown UGMA throughout the state.
You know, and it was in my head before we started, you know, Baltimore historically is, if you don't mind me saying, the Black folks in Baltimore have always historically, as it relates to, say, Philadelphia, I'm thinking of Hezekiah Grice, and I'm thinking of the first what they call color convention, Negro conventions. And it was this young man out of Baltimore who really brought it to the elder of Richard Allen to you know, establish this political formation where discussion and resolutions and policies and agendas could be established that went from, you know, the 1830s all the way into, you know, the turn of the 20th century. When you mentioned about, and I'm doing this to show us how, and what I'm going to say and doing is raised in question to show us the what it takes to be engaged in the kind of people's work that you're engaged in, you and the party is engaged in. And so what I'm asking is, okay, and you kind of touched on it with one or two, the type of organizational networks that you have because of the work that you're doing in the area, in the communities that you're servicing. And you mentioned, you know, the political education and the whole thing of the, you know, how you went about the success of the food security sovereignty process. What are the organizational networks that you, the party and mechanism feel that over this last 2 years, you've been able to create relationship with that has helped you help to make this happen? And what is it that you have to do in order to create those kind of network relationships with others who are, as you say, it doesn't have to be in the name of the UGMA People's Progressive Party, but you have to have the relationships of other. What is it that we have to do in order to kind of create those kind of relationships?
So I think one of the points that I was making before is that where do leaders exist in our community, right? There always are leaders in our communities, whether it's the grandma who feeds all the children in the neighborhood or the brother who, protects people in the neighborhood. There are education programs. There's always something happening in our community, and we don't necessarily call ourselves leaders, but the truth is that we function as leaders and unrecognized, right? What we've been able to do is really tap into who those folks are, right? What they're doing in the community. Through some of the work that we've done around the housing struggles, we've met a lot of public housing president, you know, council president, council committees. So we've been working with these folks to do like to be able to work together, right? To network themselves, to say, hey, in my public housing, you know, area, we're having this problem, and we've been trying to do, you know, X, Y, and Z. We get them together with other folks that we run to going through the same issue. Then they become one voice talking to the Baltimore Housing Authority, right? We've been able to have those folks come to our political education, and they sit in the back and they listen, right? And they add real practical, this is what we're doing. This is how we did it. This is how we raise money. And they, in turn, inspire other folks and put us in contact with new folks as they do what they do. It's really just been about us being really connected to grassroots organizers, then raising the political education level so that they have a better understanding that we're not just trying to run for office and that it's not a hustle, right? It's not a hustle, but we're actually trying to understand how do we bend power. And I think that's the hardest thing because it's a slow process. But the finding of the leaders and the organizations really isn't that hard. It's really being connected to them. And then also, I think it's also important to understand where people are in their development, whether they be a 501c3, which limits a lot of the political stuff they can do, whether they're folks who, you know, find ways to put, you know, nickels and dimes together to get what they do. I mean, all of these folks have different levels of relationships and political understandings, but it's really been upon us really to be consistent with the political education and the kind of, you know, bringing organizations together who are really involved with struggle, putting them together.
Yeah, and before I turn it back over to Elliot, because I think it's important to see the agenda that, you know, laid out for this conference, a curiosity question, especially when we talk about a workers led political initiative, right? We've seen within the last couple of months, the brother and his name escaped me from Amazon, you know, I was able to put together a coalition or really get a union passed into the Amazon work place. In
the Smalls in New York?
Yes.
Chris Smalls. Yeah. Okay.
And I'm wondering if you don't mind sharing your assessment of that and particularly if you don't mind adding to that, what do you think Chris has to be concerned of as an organizer? You know, because my reading is they thought he wouldn't be able to be successful. What are the lessons learned that we get as far as workers in relationship to what he was able to do now that he's was successful, him and that group who were gave that commitment to be successful, because it was tried, I think it was in Alabama or Mississippi, and even in a black town, and it wasn't successful at creating you. What lessons y'all seen out of that from a worker's perspective in relationship to solidarity or organizing?
Sense? So I think definitely the example of what happened in Bessemer, Alabama, was very helpful for all those forces, right? What Amazon themselves, the kind of tricks and tactics they use to frustrate the union work was important to learn from. We have a relationship now. We have a relationship with Amazon organizers here in Maryland. There are several who are doing the same kind of work that Chris Smalls is doing, and they are connected to that kind of work. We've been out to a couple of Amazon plants and supported walkouts. And again, always providing political education, always providing more material about what they're doing has been one of the big roles that we've played there. What we've seen is this, is that we have to invest in political education. And I guess I've said it so many times, but the truth is that the system that we exist in today, the electoral political system we exist in today, is completely dependent upon the ignorance of the participants, right, of the electorate. It needs an uneducated electorate to be able to move us in the way that it does, right, to make us feel threatened, to make us scared of a Republican. We in Maryland, you know, the boogeyman for us in Baltimore City is a Democrat, right? But no one would ever say that. They just accept all the bad policies that a Democrat will put in place, right? So the problem is that without the political education, people are defenseless, so that they still trust authority that does not have their best interest, right? And the work that I've seen with the Amazon workers, organizers here in Maryland, and a glimpse of what was being done in New York, is that there's a constant need to put literature in their hands, to talk to them, to see who is already brave enough and connecting them outside of the workplace with these resources, getting them prepared to make this move, to be able to be like really specific, because they are real tangible. Just like I said before, when you knock on somebody's door, you don't have to make up a question about leadership. You can say, are you happy with X, Y, and Z in your neighborhood? And if they give you a bunch of no's, then you have a open door to start working on fixing problems. And that's what exists at Amazon, all kind of problems that most Amazon workers will tell you about. And then you have to continue to do the work. I think that is the example that we have to really take forward for that. The problem that I think can rise with that, first of all, obviously, is that when the system thinks it can identify a leader, it does several things. One, it will try to isolate you, right? Or it will try to assimilate you, right? To try to bring you in. This brother Chris, I don't know him personally. We have spoken to him once. Has to be really aware of maintaining his own political education, his own commitment to the ideas, to not become enamored with being able to sit at the table, right? Because that's the other trick that they wanted they'll do. For the most part, unions tend to be very much in partnership with the business owner, right? The capitalist class. And it is that partnership which keeps workers, right, under control. So it's going to be really important for Brother Chris to really stay focused on what the real goal is, which is to serve the working people at Amazon, right? And that may even mean that he himself has to step back and let other forces come to the front, because if they think he's the person they're always dealing with, then that's a tactic they're going to have to take away from them.
That's powerful. And Ellie, and what Brother Nambi brings up, what I'm looking at this, that this is where Black media can come in and being a conduit in relationship to at least getting a pulse of Brother Chris Smalls in relationship to his success, but also his political orientation, and in the exchange, understand, and that's a great example, that's a great suggestion, that the possibility of not getting enamored is being able to step back. I think that's yeah. where, I don't know if this would agree, that's where Black media could be able to be helpful in this organizing, because the Amazon body of workers seems to be ripe for all the things that you mentioned, that the Ujima Political People's Progress Party is about, it seems to be.
We're in conversation, before we transition into an open forum, we're in conversation with activists, organizer of the Ujima People's Progress Party, Brother Nnamdi Lumumba. It's the first Black-led electoral party in this country, and they're having their third conference in Baltimore, Maryland, in PG County on April 23rd. Brother Nnamdi, some of the things that's going to be covered in the conference, and some of the things that's going to be covered in the conference, the organizing around fighting police brutality, corruption, murder, community control of housing, and organizing to fight gentrification, and building Black-led workers a mutual aid. I think you and Brother Richard kind of talked about that. Let's go back to the first one there that it's kind of interesting, because it kind of goes back to what you mentioned a few minutes ago, Brother Nnamdi, about some of our people tend to trust people that don't have their best interests. I think that a percentage of Black folks was enamored after the Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, and Ahmaud Arbery murders, that they seen white folks out in the street hollering George Floyd, with their fist in the air, and they got enamored by seeing that, instead of understanding that you had a cauldron that was kind of ripe for anything to go on. People had been locked up in their house for a year. some of these folks was waiting to get out in the street and do anything. You see, when they got out there, they was turning over cars, busting windows, starting fires. So it was a lot of things going on. But being that this society has kind of went back to normal, you don't hear any uproar about this violence against black folks by police, and it hasn't stopped. Just a couple of days ago, you got a man that was wrestled to the ground on somebody's lawn and executed, shot right in the back of his head. We played a clip last week of a 70-year-old woman that was having a little mental episode that was brutally beaten by four cops, one woman, three men, kicked the door in and brutalized her. So this stuff haven't stopped. The thing that's funny is the Democratic Party has instructed the black officials or black elected officials not to talk about this anymore, to put their focus in other places. So you don't hear this even being talked about. So it's business as usual. But to talk about it from Eugenia's perspective, some of the things that's going to be covered and how we get our people to organize and realize that they can organize in their communities to deal with this. And not only deal with the violence by these cops, but violence as a whole in the community. When you start involving the community in moving the community forward, that'll work on a lot of this so senseless violence in the community. Do you agree or disagree, Brother Nnamdi?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think all these questions are really difficult questions, because a lot of it requires resources, that are usually denied to our community. It also denies the kind of relationships that we need to have in our community that have clearly changed, right, over the last decades, years. And how do we build the kind of institutions that the community trusts, whether you're 15 years old and hanging out, or whether you're 75? I think those are the kind of questions that we have to start answering when we talk about start building our own black working class institutions, right? Having our own resources and taking, whether those resources are meager or abundant, how do we use them in our own interest, as opposed to assuming that someone from City Hall or from the White House is going to solve those problems. I think it's also true that when you talk about what we call the black misleadership class, which has historically been a neo-colonial sector of our community, black people who facilitate white power and capitalism in blackface, right? They have always been the most out front political leaders in our community getting in office. And they talk about essentially what the Democratic machine wants them to talk to, whatever the talking points are. So when you have discussions, things like defund the police, you had politicians who clearly had no intention of defunding the police jumping on the bandwagon because of the fact that you have so many people in motion, white, black, male, female, whatever it is, right? Non-binary. Everyone was engaged in those, you know, in those kind of struggles. And the Democratic Party didn't care about the actual issues. They saw the opportunity to bottle all that energy, right, to get their candidates elected. And then, as you said, go back to business as usual. The problem for us has never been whether outside sectors from our community get involved with those issues. The real concern for us is who controls the narrative and who controls the organizational capacity.
Yes.
What we've seen is that organizations that call themselves not, and of course it's not every organization, but several organizations associated with Black Lives Matter, the organization, had a political core that may have looked like us, but did not have the best interests of black working class people in their agenda, right? So giving more resources, giving more connections, they were able to use all of that to ascend to the kind of place that they wanted to be in. And so not only did they take black people to the wrong place, right? They took young white people to the wrong place. And I think one other thing that always has to be understood, black people aren't the only people in this country with a problem with white supremacy and capitalism. There are lots of other people who have their own agendas. And we don't have to say your agenda has to be my agenda for you to be able to move. But what we have to be clear is that if you're going to be involved with our stuff, right, if it's going to be something that we are calling for, then you have to come under our leadership. If you can't come under our leadership, you need to go. And that's a position that you talk when you see yourself as people with power. You can tell people what you need and what the rules of engagement is. You shouldn't be having your hand out, hat in your hand, asking, please help us. That's not what we need to do. We need to learn how to have power over our own situations. So when you see black, when you see these white anarchists burning stuff up, they got legitimate problem with white supremacy and capitalism. They don't have your interests in heart. That's why they do what they do. So when we do our events, you have to, when you see them, you know what they look like. You tell them, this is the rules. We know what you do, but if you're going to stay at this event, this is what we're going to require from you, or you need to leave. Right. Those are the, and those are the kind of things we do over and over and over so that we are able to, as a movement, be able to replicate ourselves. We know what to say. We know what to expect. We know how to tell people to leave. Right. Even if they think they down there for the same reason. Sometimes they're not. You know what I mean? They think they're down there for the reason that we are for, and they're not. So I think all that is being said is that when we see movements popping up, when we see organizations pop up, the questions we have to ask is, who really runs these organizations? How do we understand their agendas, right? How do they move in the street? You know, not just in front of a camera, but when there are no cameras. That's the kind of stuff that we're talking about doing, right? And so often, unfortunately, for what we saw was, before the demonstrations have happened and after, the people who are legitimately organizing our community have never gone away, mm-hmm. right? They never got the money before, they never got the money after, but they continue to plug away, right? And the people who were pushed forward by the Democratic Party to take us into a whole nother place, those folks have been made millionaires and celebrities, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But the problems that they said that they were supposed to be attacking, you can't see any organizational capacity to do that, right? Talking to young people, building institutions, you know what I mean? All of our struggles are connected to economics. All our struggles are connected to the social ills that capitalism produces for us, what white power produces. We have to tie all those things together so people can say, now I understand what I see in my community, right? You know, now I understand why there's violence. Now I understand why the police exist in my neighborhood, but nothing ever changes, right? And just lastly, we pointed out the obvious. In some of the safest communities throughout our state, they have the least amount of police presence. So why are you telling us that the police brings peace and justice to communities when the most peaceful and the most prosperous communities have very few police that you ever see? The truth is that the economic conditions and the social conditions that have been placed on our community cause a anxiety and hostile situation, right, that people are trying to live, and they do it at the expense of other people, right? And that's the question that we have to take into our politics. When we run, we got to hold these people accountable. People may think that if we say defund the police, which is not our position necessarily, but if we say things like community control of police, community control of police doesn't mean that we want the police to tell, you know, to be in our community doing what they want. The police may not even be in our community. Maybe what is a policing force is our own neighborhood, you know, our own neighbors making a decision to patrol our community, but using the resources so that we're not going around beating our young people up and jumping on people, but we're helping them, right? We're solving problems in our community with those resources. Those are the kind of things that have to be alternatives when people go out and to vote. They need to hear these different ideas than what we've been told year after year after year, which don't work.
You know, what we'll do, because we'll probably transition in open form after our guest leaves. We do have some calls on the line. I want to see whether they want to ask you a question or make a comment. Brother Namdi, let's go to 404 first. 404, question or comment for our guest? 404, are you there? Let's go to 646, question or comment for our guests, and then we'll bring you back, and we'll be transition into open form. 646?
No, I don't have a question right now, Elliot. Just keep me on hold.
All right, and let's go to 215, question and comment for our guests. 215?
Good evening, Brother Elliot. How you doing?
How are you, sir?
Fine. Hey, Brother Richard and Brother Namdi. How y'all good brothers doing on this tonight?
Doing good, thank you.
You're welcome. Our praises be to Allah. You know, Brother Namdi, and I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. You know, we just talking about Amazon. I have a friend of mine, a brother. He used to work for Amazon, and I'm sure Brother Namdi down in Baltimore, correct?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Yeah. Yes, and I'm sure you heard the horror stories about Amazon, because he was telling me, he told me this before the news. He said how oppressive Amazon management was. He says that, you know, because, you know, like you just said, Brother Nowney, many of these Amazon sites across the country have been trying to, you know, unionize for better working conditions and better pay. And, you know, and of course, they always show our people with the slave mentality. They showed a group of our people, I think it was in Alabama, near the end of last year, early this year, that was trying to organize a union down there, and they talked. They, of course, they picked the sister that had the slave mentality about how she wasn't one. She was against the union. She don't want no union on her job, and all this nonsense. But how she only that all the union gonna do is cause trouble. You know, I'm happy the way I am. You know, talking all crazy and stuff like that. But my point, Brother Nomi, is this: my friend who worked for Amazon, he said, Joe, you don't realize how bad the conditions is. He said, at the place he worked up here in the suburbs of Philadelphia, he said there was under so much pressure to meet deadlines and things like that. It was to be docked pay if they came back like a minute from lunch late or from break time late, whatever. He said many of their workers would carry bottles around, Brother Nomi, bottles where they had to do the urine, where they defecate and urinate in these bottles, because they were scared if they went to the bathroom and was late coming back, they would get docked pay. I mean, what kind of crazy modern day slave conditions is that? And I'm sure, Brother Nam, you may have heard those same stories yourself.
Yes, I have. Listen, I will just say this. One of the things that we've realized in Maryland is that there's going to have to be grassroots community support for Amazon labor, you know, unionizing. You can't just leave it up to just the workers themselves in that location, because the problem is that Amazon uses all its connections to influence them. People have to feel from the community, we support you. Listen, they out there working. Everybody was so glad to get their little knickknacks, right, when we was locked down and Amazon workers were forced to go to work to do that. Well, if you really were so happy about your stuff, support them being the right to have a union and having a livable wage in that location, right? But that's the kind of work that needs to be done, not just on the workers themselves, but the whole community, to create a groundwork. Maybe new people going to Amazon already prepared to be in union organizing because of the kind of outreach that we support and have been trying to do.
I agree. And Brother Nam, you can see the same thing with Starbucks. Right? I got friends that work for Starbucks. You see many Starbucks, you know, organizing around the country. You see the efforts being made by the anti-union people to try to stop them from organizing. But you're right, it has to be done on the grassroots level, whether it be with Starbucks or Amazon. And I definitely encourage you, Brother Nambi, to keep doing what you're doing down in Maryland and throughout this country to get our people organized for labor union with a livable wage, not no damn minimum wage, but a livable wage and stuff. Because see what gets me, Brother Nambi, I heard some of these white bigots, some of these Negroes that support that kind of stuff, they wouldn't even work for no damn $7.25 an hour, but they want somebody else to work for it. They or their family or their children, they wouldn't work for that kind of money, but they want some sister or brother or some ignorant white person to work for $7.25 an hour and with no benefits and stuff. How the hell are you going to have a child in daycare, Brother Nambi, afford a car, pay your rent or your mortgage out of some $7.25 an hour? It's just impossible. But yet they want people to work for that kind of stuff, man. These people are so evil and nasty and racist and mean-spirited. Man, I run out of adjectives describing these people, man. They're just evil, out and out evil. Greedy-ass, capitalist, evil people. That's what they are. But anyway, Brother Elliot, I'll get off. And I'll, you know, when you bring Brother Nami back on an open forum, hopefully I can, you know, call back again, because I got some more comments to make about Joe Biden and that Uncle in that Uncle Tom down in South Carolina, James Clyburn, because I saw him on a Sharpton show today. James Clyburn is a disgrace, like, but like I said, I want to take up too much time now, but when I call back, I expand on Jim Clyburn. He is a disgrace in this life, and he's a disgrace in the next life. I mean, his head is so far up Joe Biden's behind. If Joe Biden reached in his pocket and grabbed a quarter, he'll grab James Clyburn's head. He's a disgrace, man. You know? Please.
Well, I'll put you on hold so you can come back later on.
All right, thanks, Elliot. Uh-huh.
Let's go to 334 in Montgomery, 334.
Peace and blessings, brothers. I've just tuned in, so I'll just be listening for the rest of the show.
Okay, I'll put you back on hold.
Thank you.
Brother Nomdi, I want to thank you and Brother Brandon for your work. And some of the other folks that's involved with the Ujima People's Progress Party, I see that you said some of the folks that have run for different offices down there are in are functioning in those offices now and still holding true to the values and principles of the party. I'm glad to see it's moving in a positive direction and the organizing continues. That's one of the things that Brother Richard always talks about, that political education and the organizing of our people around community issues where we can make a difference instead of sitting back waiting for some of these black misleadership class to do something for the people when they only doing something around getting reelected, staying in office, and as Brother Richard says, being a political entrepreneur. So, again, we're going to have you on again because of some other things happening a couple of months from now that you're going to be involved in. So it's a lot of things happening this year around leadership and organizing that is going to be very key to the community. And the door is always open for you and Brother Brandon and anybody else from the party down there that you want to come on and talk about some issues, because whatever's going on in Baltimore, believe me, it's happening in Philly, it's happening in New York, it's happening in Chicago, it's happening in any of these cities and urban areas where we're dwelling. So we got common interests, common problems, and really common solutions.
Absolutely. I'll just really quickly also, folks, if anyone's interested, they can find out more about our conference. It's at tinyurl.com/UPPconference2022. Again, that's tinyurl.com/UPPconference2022. Also, you can find out more about UGMA at UPPMaryland.org.
Brother Brandon, before we go, Richard, any more comments or anything that you want to say to Brandon before you, Brother Nam, before he leaves?
Relationship to the conference, I see that. So it'll be, people can attend, and they can physically attend, which is new in this moment, and they can be able to, this is the part I'm unclear, they can also be able to be online if they register.
Absolutely. Yep, okay. Exactly. So we recognizing the time, right? And also, there's seniors who want to support us, who just not able to venture out. We understand it's a hybrid event. People can come in on site, or you can participate in the discussion online through a webinar. So different ways for people to participate.
And the reason why that's become so important, because then those who are in the Time for Awakening audience who may not even be in Maryland per se could be able to at least listen in, get lessons of, or be able to sharpen that political education from the conference.
That's exactly what we want. We want people to be able to learn from our experience and not have to make some of the same mistakes that we've done. We've learned some things the hardest way possible,
And my last comment, Elliot, I might be going, I'll be out of line, but you did say, Brother Nambi, it would be interesting to have you and Brother Chris Smalls in conversation about, and I'm looking at Amazon, but I'm looking at mostly those, as you described, not the workers who participate in the union, but the body of people who are working under these conditions that don't see the value of being organized as a political body. Because I think that's the same mindset that's in our community when we do go door to door, right? It's those people that is said that stands on the sideline. And this becomes a microcosm of how that is. So it would just be interesting, sometime in the future, if it was possible to have that kind of conversation to see, just to see where he stands, but how, again, the lessons learned and possibly the protection needed in order to not have the capitalist formation of not just Amazon, but as Brother Joe brought up, Starbucks or any of these kind of large corporate conglomerates that are dealing with service as the means that black folks are going into, young black folks are going into, to try to make a living out of. I just like to see that.
Yeah, I mean, we've always been supportive of the Amazon work. I'd like to pick his brain as well, right? To learn what succeeded, what was not, you know, so successful there. I think the question has always been, working people have to be organized around their interests. I think we've been clear that the leadership will always form, right? It's not a call for leadership. It's a call for organization. Part of being organized is deciding where leadership is. And sometimes the leadership is in larger positions. And sometimes the most important things are the smaller decisions that have to be made, right? I think we have to be convinced for our people have to be convinced that being organized is the solution and not waiting for leaders. The development of leaders is what happens in institutions, is what happens in the midst of struggle. And you have to be real serious about developing that kind of leadership. Education is always important. Challenging the ideas of this society is important. Stephen Biko had a quote. He said, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed, right? If you are convinced that you can't win, I mean, that is 90% of the battle, because the oppressor has not even had to put their hands on you, right? Because you're already sabotaged your effort to be liberated.
And a powerful point that you message, you know, in relationship also, besides the conference that's going to be going on, is that the community has to be willing to support those workers in their fight because of the type of organ of resources that corporations have, leadership they have, infrastructure they have. And if the community doesn't recognize that, then really the community loses out. In the example that Brother Elliot brought up earlier, of the example of, say, what's going on in Watson, right? Because the community has to see that these forces are against us, and even be supportive to the those workers, whoever they may be.
Brother Navdi, before you leave, you know, I just thought of something, and I want you to kind of elaborate on this a little while longer, if you don't mind. You got a few minutes, Brother Navdi? I think we might have lost him.
No, I'm here. I was okay. Just in mute.
Okay. Brother Navdi, you're in Maryland.
Yes.
And in Maryland, you have two, and I'm quite sure it's probably more, but two of some of our most prestigious places of education, Howard and Morgan.
Right.
We know that during the 60s that a lot of the activism and some of our grassroots leaders, some important grassroots leaders, came off these college campuses. And quite a few of them came out of Howard, to be honest.
Yes.
The organizing and what you're doing, how has it translated on the college campuses? That's a two-part question. Let me just ask that first one, and then I'll ask the second one. How has it translated? Because you're a brother of a certain age. You're a millennial. You, Brother Brandon, and others. So,
well, I'm a little older than millennial.
But you're not an old man, put it that way, or older.
Right.
So you still
right.
can relate to some of our brothers and sisters on the campus as far as age.
Yes.
Talk about how your organizing, your political organizations and political education and things like that has translated on the college campuses with the minds of some of our young people.
Sure. And actually, Maryland does have some of a historical. We have Bowie State University, University of Maryland Eastern Shore, which is closer to Delaware. And then also we have Coppin State University, which is in Baltimore, West Baltimore as well.
Okay.
So we've been physically located several years, not currently, but before the pandemic, we had a decent presence on Coppin State University. Some presence on Morgan State. We were able to do a lot of our political education there, and several students have come through. Some have stuck. Brother Brandon is a Coppin State student as well. I'm a Morgan State graduate. So we know that those are places where you can definitely recruit from. One of the things that we recognize is, especially with the potential of being a state party, just like the Democratic and the Republican Party have, quote unquote, young Democrats, you know, clubs, young Republican clubs and things like that. As a state party, we would be able to move forward with a very similar structure, right? Being able to have young UGMA clubs, if you will, on campuses that would be able to have some recognition as far as being able to, you know, to kind of be able to put things on boards and to openly organize on campus. I think we have to think about and always be plugged into organizing that base. We're talking about some of the, you know, some of the best minds in our communities, people who haven't been deeply indoctrinated, you know what I'm saying, to all the politics and all the misinformation. And it's a great place to deal with ideas, right? Even if they have been indoctrinated, obviously, we get to challenge it there. These are people who don't have children and aren't overly tied down with too many responsibilities that a lot of older adults tend to have. So it also makes for a very good core of people who can be organizers, right? And lastly, obviously, they bring skills, things that generally aren't allowed to stay in our communities. These are people who have access to intellectual skills. They might have, you know, access to medical skills. They can help with education, building institutions, bringing some skills. So it's a real good reservoir for our community to organize. And it's something that as we come back, coming out of the COVID situation, something we see ourselves moving forward with. Another campus near NPG County is Bowie State University, which is another historical black university. Those are the kind of places we would like to see ourselves on a regular basis, being able to recruit young people. So as they come out of college, they don't go into to the misleadership class. They stay connected to the community. They stay connected to working class struggle and be resources for our movement and not resources for white power and capitalism.
Yeah, you know, that was part of my second question, because when you're on the college campuses, you're in direct competition, and I'll use that term, mm-hmm. with the black misleadership class that wants to recruit some of these young minds to work in their behalf.
Yeah.
So that kind of puts you at in the crosshairs of some of these folks. Just talk about it from that perspective, because, you know, they see a lot of these folks, whether it's Kamala Harris,
yeah,
or others that came off of black college campuses, I'm getting a little feedback. That might be on your end, Brother Nandi. When they see a lot of these things happening on these campuses and some of the folks going back to these schools, talking to young folks because they want to recruit those young minds, the good thing about it is the critical thinking that's there, where these in the marketplace of ideas, some of these things can be put forth to our young people, and they can determine by just looking at the issues, the things that's best for them, the things that's best for the community, and not necessarily looking at what's best for my pocket or me personally.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is that these HBCUs aren't institutions for black liberation, right? They're not funded by the state to become institutions to be hubs of developing you know, black leadership that serves us. They're there to obviously facilitate white power and black face. They're there to represent black middle class interests. They're there to you know, to fall in line with what the black establishment misleadership class has in order for them. And we have to be in those places to challenge those ideas, to help people stay connected to the communities that they're coming from, right? So that they don't lose the understanding of the contradictions that our people, you know, exist in. And lastly, to be able to give them organization. Because again, the thing is, again, we're not selling leadership, we're selling organization. If we are organized, we're able to start solving problems with the resources we have. And again, whether those resources are small or whether those resources are large, if we control those resources and use them for our institutions, for our struggles, then we can start making progress, right? Those people have to be plugged into that. Otherwise, all the resources, all the institutions, all the think tanks, all the opportunities are being given to them from representatives of this country's elite, from this country's Black misleadership class. And once they get into those sectors, it is very difficult to get those people to come back and be servants to our Black community.
We were in conversation this evening with activist organizer of the Ujima People's Progress Party, Brother Nnamdi Lumumba. The third statewide conference is coming off April 23rd in PG County, Maryland. Brother Nnamdi, before you leave us, just give out any contacts if people want to get involved, any listeners in the Maryland area, if they want to come personally to the convention, contact numbers, emails, anything you want to give. The floor is yours.
Yes, certainly. Thank you. So always we invite people to check us out, what the party's doing, our platform, uppmaryland.org. You can get us there. Also, if you're on Facebook, we have a very active page there, Ujima People's Progress Party. We post usually daily there. And lastly, if you're interested in the conference, you can find us at tinyurl.com/UPP Conference 2022. You'll be able to register there. You'll see the agenda for the day. Whether you're able to travel here, we're doing it as a hybrid. You can take in the conference from home as a remote watcher, or you can, if you're in Maryland, come on location and participate at the conference. We will have lunch provided there and also childcare if people need it. So we invite folks to be involved with the process, like I said, whether you're online or in person.
Brother Nnamdi, we'll talk to you soon, man.
Our brothers, thank you all so much again, all the listeners as well.
You take care now.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll transition into open dialogue. You can get involved in the discussion by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. Abibitumi. Black Power. Abibitumi. The only word you need to know to join your global Kometiyu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometiyu Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
In this crooked game of power politics here in America, the Negro, namely the race problem, integration, civil rights issue, are all nothing but tools used by the whites who call themselves liberals against another group of whites who call themselves conservatives, either to get into power or to retain power. Among whites here in America, the political teams are no longer divided into Democrats and Republicans. The whites who are now struggling for control of the American political throne are divided into liberal and conservative camps. The white liberals from both parties cross party lines to work together toward the same goal. And white conservatives from both parties do likewise. The white liberal differs from the white conservative only in one way. The liberal is more deceitful, more hypocritical than the conservative. Both want power, but the white liberal is the one who has perfected the art of posing as the Negro's friend and benefactor. And by winning the friendship and support of the Negro, the white liberal is able to use the Negro as a pawn or a weapon in this political football game that is constantly raging between the white liberals and the white conservatives. The American Negro is nothing but a political football.
Since the 60s, you will see nothing but betrayals by the petty bourgeois elements in our society. The African bourgeoisie is the most corrupt bourgeoisie in the world. In Africa, they seek luxury in the midst of mass suffering. There are more Mercedes in Africa than in any other continent in the world. In America, as soon as they arrive at a position based on the blood of the people, they snatch that position and run away from the people. But you must not think that they represent the people. They only represent their opportunistic self using the people every step of the way. So you must not be confused. The petty bourgeoisie everywhere will be running for cover, but the masses will spare them not. Consequently, we who have dedicated our lives to the people's struggle, we, who knowing that the people will always be free, we, understanding that we must make a contribution to qualify our struggle since the 60s, have been dedicating all our energies to only one task, the organization of the masses of our people. We are not running for mayor. We're not running for president. No changes can come from the top down. We're not stupid. Changes can only come from the bottom up. The masses and the masses alone can make them. If you want to learn something from the 60s, the lesson is simple. Organize the masses of the people. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're the one who put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years. And all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last. Because you're a chump. A political chump. The party that you bash controls two-thirds of the House of Representatives and the Senate, and still they can't keep their promise to you, because you're a chump. Anytime you throw your weight behind a political party that controls two-thirds of the government, and that party can't keep the promise that it made to you during election time, and you are dumb enough to walk around continuing to identify yourself with that party, you're not only a chump, but you're a traitor to your race.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:28 here in the Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening, and you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Brother Richard.
Yes, yes.
Brother Namdi and Brother Brandon are still doing the work down there, and it seems to be moving forward. We'll be getting them back on soon because of some other events happening a couple of months from now that I know they want to be in conversation about. And we'll have them on along with other organizers from around the country that are involved in it. So it's going to be good conversation later on, probably another month or two, maybe another month.
Sounds good.
Richard, we just transition into open forum. And callers can get involved in the conversation. Couple things, Richard, and I saw this and I shared it with you. I want to share it with the listening audience because there's a couple of things I want to bring up. And you see the report from the Urban League that comes out. I don't think they did one last year. This is two. I think they do it every year, but I think they skipped a year because of COVID. The report just came out. I'll share some of the things from that report. I don't know whether you saw it. I'll share some of the things in that report. One of the things I want to share, Richard, is an article that was in the Jamaican Gleaner published report. And get your opinion on it, and the listening audience can weigh in on it if they choose to. Or they can, you know, think about what's being stated here. Because I think it's highly important, especially when you're talking about leadership. Because being that we live in this country and everything is monitored, especially when it comes to you and our people, they don't want to highlight things that are against their objectives. I'll put it that way. But let me read this and I'll get you to weigh in on it, Richard. The title of the article is Kagame Calls for African CARICOM Solidarity. Rwandan President Paul Kagame has called for solidarity among African and Caribbean nations, charging that they must work together to advance their common interests and common positions globally. In an address during a joint sitting of the House of Parliament on Thursday, Kagame, who had been hailed for steering Rwanda away from the brink of ruin after taking office in 2000 on the heels of the tumultuous 1990s, said Africa and the Caribbean must open direct lines of communication. His comments comes just weeks before he takes up duties as the chairman of the Commonwealth, even as there is discord within the Caribbean community over who should be elected Secretary General in June. Kagame, who was on the third day visit to the island, said that the Caribbean is expected to be put forward strong. Kagame is on a three-day visit to the island, said that the Caribbean is expected to put forth strong representation when the Commonwealth heads of government meet in Kigali, Rwanda. In our diversity, we share common traits. Our people are resilient, creative, and as our common history shows, also indestructible. This mutual recognition should have practical, tangible effects. We belong to a number of important multilateral bodies, including the Commonwealth and the Organization of African, Caribbean, and Pacific States, Kagame says. Africa and the Caribbean should work together to advance common positions in these bodies where our interests align, as they often do. The Rwandan president said that the two regions are beyond relating to each other through intermediaries. Our diplomats tend to meet in London, New York, or Geneva. I have no problem with that, but we should do it otherwise directly, says Kagame. He said that it is high time for Africa and the Caribbean to work together in direct and sustained manner, both through representation of regional organizations and bilaterally. He also wants direct people-to-people exchanges, particularly for the youth and entrepreneurs. Meanwhile, the Prime Minister, Andrew Holness, says Kagame's visit presented an opportunity to deepen collaborations between the two countries. We believe that there is much for us to share and learn from each other through our exchanges. We should have the opportunity to take forward technical cooperations in several fields. We're looking forward to advancing our economic relations through increased trade and investment prospects, particularly as it relates to logistics, agricultural zones, and manufacturing, he added. Richard, give me your assessment and your opinion on what he's stating in reference to the black world working together.
It's you know, as we were talking about it earlier, I'm really impressed with Kagame's strategic moves. I'm really, you know, and as you were reading through it, I'm really, I like to make clear, as to my understanding, that what we must be clear, we specifically in North America, that because we're English speaking people, even of African ancestry, whether that be in the Caribbean or in Rwanda, because of colonization and enslavery. And, you know, what Kagame is showing and even in saying that not having any longer middlemen to speak for us is a level of geopolitical relationship being developed by his particular leadership. And my, you know, I have to do this, Elliot, because those of us in North America of African ancestry have to really grow up from a geopolitical perspective because of what he is representing and what he's saying. I'll put that out there. And I put that out there because I'm just hear too much of our, amongst us, the identification question about us, whether it be us in North America, the Caribbean, or in Africa, and we're all English speaking because of our particular experience. And he kind of make reference in, or has made reference in that article. What I like in that he's taking the strategic, and again, it's strategic. And you hear what he said, the elements that he said, for the young people to be exchanged for their development and entrepreneurial. So he's looking from a state-to-state perspective to build up a generation. And we must keep in mind the African Union, which I have challenges with, but, you know, these are the mechanisms. They have a 2063 plan. It's not for this generation, not just for him. In 2063, he and some of us won't even be around. But we have to make moves now towards that. And the other thing I see him saying, they're using that geopolitical, what do you call it, the Commonwealth structure,
mm-hmm.
right? That Commonwealth structure was primarily before would have been English-speaking diplomats that would have been bringing together their past colonies and future neo-colonial
economic, from an economic perspective, which still may be if we look at what is the direct foreign investment or what is the trade relationship of those countries in relationship, who holds dominance? Is it still Europe or not? But this move, it sounds like Kagame is saying we can be able to restructure that. That's a positive move. We have to be cautious, and we have to look under the hood. And when I say look under the hood, to make sure that he isn't a new type of representative of, say, international European business interests or military interests, where no longer you'll see white leaders, business leaders or companies or military leaders. You'll see black men and women. But I get the impression from the moves he's been making, Kagame is sincere over the last 10 years of what he's been doing, 12 years of what he's been doing to put Rwanda in a position where it can call the shots within its own nation state, even at some point, even when he's gone. So to me, this is a positive thing. I just hope that we in North America actually, again, grow up to understand, because we could make the same kind of relationship as a political body, but because we still are having identity wars amongst us, we can't even speak as a body for our future development.
Well, let me say something in reference to that about us making those moves, which I agree. The only difference is this, Richard. In this particular article here, you have the leadership, because as we stated before, Africa has 53 countries on that continent. And some of the leaders in some of the countries are definitely puppets to the United States or Western powers. But you have the people that they represent that don't agree with them. And some of these leaders coming along don't agree with other moves that have been made by some of their predecessors or colleagues. So when you see leadership saying this, it's a little different than here, because the leadership here, and just like Brother Brandon mentioned, the black misleadership class is not advocating that we reach out to our brothers and sisters on the other continent. They're not advocating that at all. In fact, they advocate more that you reach out to folks that don't even look like you, other Europeans. They don't advocate that you reach out to the brothers and sisters on the continent. I just want to repeat three statements that he made here that's really key, and I think it goes beyond Kagame. It goes directly to a mentality that we should cultivate. He says, in our diversity, we share common traits. Now, he's talking about folks from the continent and the Caribbean. He said, in our diversity, we share common traits. Our people are resilient, creative, have a common history, and also indestructible. I mean, that's us. That's us. I don't want to play these games about, he's from the islands, he's from the continent, and all that. Then we're defining ourselves by Europeans that have scattered us. That's us, what he just stated. And then he mentioned here about that we should work together, Africa and the Caribbean should work together to advance common positions. He said, our diplomats tend to meet in London, New York, or Geneva. I have no problem with that, but we should do it otherwise, directly. So he's not trashing where they've been meeting, but he's saying that they should do more person-to-person in places where they can determine. Mm-hmm. And then he states, because he mentions about the diplomats meeting, the governmental bodies, but then he said he also wants direct people-to-people exchanges. Now, do you see that or hear that from black misleadership here in this country?
They're not even you know, they're just representing America.
Exactly. That's the difference in what this man is position he's putting forth in this mixed leadership class here. They're representing America, and that's all. They don't represent any person-to-person exchanges, and they definitely don't represent any exchanges between the leadership class here and other blacks on other continents, unless it's for American interests only.
And let's give an example to make it clear. When Cuba offered African-Americans the opportunity to come to Cuba to produce medical students, and they made that agreement specifically with African-Americans, not with America, with African-Americans. Do you see that the representatives of African-Americans pushing that agreement? That would have been a people to a nation relationship for the benefit of the people, because in that relationship, it would say, and you go back with this medical skills and provide that service to the people from where you come from. That's the agreement. To me, I don't see where that's a loss, unless America, as a representative of America, you say, I can't take that agreement.
That's exactly where it came from. Because that example you cite is similar to what he's saying. We got a governmental agreement, and then we should have a people-to-people agreement. Now, when you cited that agreement that was made, that memorandum of understanding that was made 22 years ago now with the CBC, that they would send at least 500 black students from around the country a year to learn medical training in Cuba and then go back to their communities. 500 a year. For 22 years, Richard, that could have made a huge dent in the problems in these communities.
Mm-hmm.
But it was never fulfilled because it was against their oath of office to do anything with countries that these European countries don't agree that they should be talking to. I just wanted to throw that out there because I thought it was really interesting article, a real interesting article.
And I just add that, you know, as you brought that up with the CARICOM and you know, the Caribbean nations and Rwanda and Kagame leaving that, because remember earlier, one element was when he made the relationship with in Ghana for the production of the cocoa. And you heard what the Ghanaian president told of Sweden and America, but particularly Sweden, in relationship to what they were no longer going to do in their cocoa arrangement. That's a different type of alignment. Or with the arrangement he made with, and there's serious challenges going on on the eastern horn of Africa. With Ethiopia. We can't overlook that. And that's why I'm really adamant about African-Americans' geopolitical maturity, because we're silent. But he reached out to the Ethiopian president. I haven't heard to what degree, but at least to try. He's making moves to be able to bring about this global infrastructure, at least if it's for nobody else, for the nation state of Rwanda. And it's black. Nation to nation relationship, and it's black. Even if they're using European structures like the Commonwealth, if that makes sense to anybody.
Another article that I want to share, Richard, and it's kind of funny when I've seen it. It was in Al Jazeera. Let me read the header. Ukrainians Zelensky requests address with the African Union. Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky has asked to speak to the African Union, according to Senegalese counterpart Macky Sall. So far, a number of African countries has been neutral or muted on their criticism of Russia's invasion of the Ukraine earlier this month, the United Nations General Assembly suspended Russia from the UN Human Rights Council. 9 of the countries that voted against the resolution were African, and another 23 countries abstained from voting, more than half of the continent. So he wants to meet with the African Union. I mean, what is he going to talk about, Richard? What now? He came to his brethren here in the United States and his NATO brethren asking him for money and weapons to fight his Eastern European brothers in Russia. So what is he? What are you asking for? What are you coming to the continent to ask for? Are you kidding me? I wouldn't even take no meeting with him if I was some of the heads down there. But I'm just saying, you know, come on.
It as you say, this Ukraine, when we look at this from that perspective that you're raising, it's really crystallizing within the continent the contradiction. Contradiction meaning their dissatisfaction with the Europeans' construction of the power relationship. The number that abstain, now they ain't go all out and say we're not agreeing. You know, Negroes, they just gonna stand on the side, right? Like, look, because they're not getting. We can either look at from the point of the non-aligned perspective. Look, we're not getting involved in y'all stuff.
Mm-hmm.
No, not this time.
Yeah, over half of the continent said. Basically, we're not getting involved.
Right.
9 countries said absolutely no. The other ones just abstained. So it's basically a no vote.
Right, right. And then the other way to look at it is that, you know, Ukraine, your alignment with America and NATO, who have always been in opposition to us.
Exactly.
Are you asking us? You coming to us for support when at some, even if we were against the leaders of that time, and I'm talking about those leaders who were getting support from Moscow, from Russia, and they at the behest of the American military and intelligence community destabilize their country or maintain them under neo-colonialist rule by removing them, they know, as you say, the people ain't too all that in giving themselves up to America and the European, these American European allies that are connected by NATO, that Ukraine, this whole thing is about, right? Ukraine, Russia saying it doesn't want Ukraine to connect with NATO out of their security interests. The people on the ground in these African countries, they ain't about supporting Ukraine, NATO, or United States in general. I mean, so you see the leadership saying, well, look, you ain't getting us in that. And so it goes back to your point, your question. What is he coming to them for? Unless he's trying to break that up, you know, or even identify who is for them and who is against them. Because these are long-range games. These ain't short-range games. These ain't reactionary games they're playing.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I think that they're supposed to give an answer to him this week sometime. So we'll see and I'll share with the Time for Awakening audience what they say. Or if they just monitor some of these news agencies, they'll see some type of response. Before I go to the phones here, let me share this, just some of the things from that Urban League report. This was in Al Jazeera. I'll read the header. Systematic racism holding back Black Americans, civil rights group. Reports. The National Urban League says the median household income for a Black family in the U.S. is 37% lower than that of a white family. civil rights group says its equality index, a compendium of average outcomes by race in many aspects of life, showed that black Americans, despite making economic and health gains, still only get 73% of what white people enjoy in this country. And they have been compiling these statistics since 2005. It says these numbers change so little, and this is Morial saying this, these numbers have changed so little and so slowly. It tells me that this is institutional disparity based on race seems to be built into American society, says National Urban League President Mark Morial. Now, wait a minute, Richard. Before I continue some of this article, let's look at that statement he just said and take it apart. Well, I mean, he said what he said. You really can't take it apart. But I want to read it again. It says, these numbers change so little and so slowly. What it tells me is this is institutional disparity based on race seems to be built into American society. What do you mean seems to be?
Well, it is Negro Ben.
I mean, come on. Listen, some of these people put out reports that that kind of expose these people, but then they go right to the door, and then they don't want to go in. They can kick the door in, but they don't want to call a spade a spade. What do you mean seems to be? Now, I'm going to continue on. The index showed that the median household income for black people is $43,862. It's 37% less than white folks, with the average household income of $69,823. Black people also are less likely to benefit from home ownership, the engine of generational wealth in the U.S. Census data shows that black couples are more than twice as likely as their white counterparts to be denied a mortgage or home improvement loan, which leads to just 59% of the median home equity white households have, and just 13% of their wealth. In an area of wealth, we've seen almost no change, none, since the civil rights days, Morial says. The wealth disparity has gotten worse. And before I continue, that's what leads to a lot of these communities after about 10 years or whatever. If black folks move into communities, how the buildings itself starts going down, Richard. And then they wonder, they say black people then tore up the area. But, you know, it states right here. They're not only denied mortgages, but they're denied home improvement loans. So when you get in these places, you can improve your place unless you got money to do it. And generally, you don't have the money to do it. Most people do, whether they go into business, fix their homes up. And I'm talking about major repairs. I'm not talking about if a pipe bust or something like that. Major repairs to their home. They get money to do it. They either take out a home equity line of credit, they borrow money from the bank. But if you can't do this, then your place is going, your investment is going to go down.
And you have to have a job at a certain income level even to do that.
Yeah, well, and that's another story. Because then when they see you have a certain income level, you ain't getting no money. You ain't getting no loan. It says this report comes nearly 2 years after the nation underwent a major reckoning on racism in the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd, a black man who died after a white police officer pinned him to the ground for several minutes during an arrest in Minneapolis. Although some states have moved to make reforms in policing after several unarmed black people are killed by police, the report shows that blacks have been more than twice as likely as white people to experience threats or use of force during police encounters. They're also three times more likely to be jailed if arrested. In 2020, they were 93% more likely to be victims of hate crimes. Educational gaps abound. Schools with more minority students are more likely to have inexperience, less trained, even uncertified teachers. Fewer of these students are enrolled in STEM classes that can lead to higher paying jobs. Black students are less likely to graduate from college. Moriel chose to release this report in Atlanta, where a concentration of historically black colleges have long represented high achievement among African Americans, in part because the survey shows a declining faith among young black people that voting can make a difference. Hmm. The Urban League is responding by launching a Reclaim Your Vote campaign. Georgia is ground zero for voter suppression, the legislation said after January 6th had been sweeping and aggressive to suppress the black vote, Moriel says. We got to remain resolute, push back against this, but we cannot give in, we cannot give up. Now, Richard, this report shows that this society hasn't changed. It's just, you know, nothing has changed according to what they're saying. And if you look at the report, you see members of the bourgeoisie, and I'll use that term, bourgeoisie have contributed to this report. You'll see all their faces, even Kamala Harris. So these people know exactly what's going on. But they're just like you said, they're political entrepreneurs. So as long as they're taken care of, I mean, you know, if it's politically expedient for them to say things in reference to you, they'll do it. Other than that, they're not really concerned about the masses of black folks. They're just not. So we see that this stuff haven't changed. And what he cites in here, even after this furor over George Floyd and the white folks in the street hollering George Floyd with their fists in the air, he said that since then, stuff haven't changed as far as policing, and it's gotten worse. We just seen two incidents this week. Mm-hmm. Young man, I think he had a broken taillight or a light, a bulb was out or something like that, and it results in him getting his brains blew out on somebody's lawn. The cop put the gun right into the back of his head and just unloaded. I guess he'll have some type of excuse. He didn't realize what he was grabbing. He thought he was grabbing his radio. Whatever.
Frustrated because he wouldn't stay still.
Wow. Let's go to the phones and see if anybody wants to jump on. And you can jump on in this time we have left by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Let's go to 404. See if they got any question, comment. 404, you there? 404 must have dozed off or something. Let's go to 334. 334.
Good evening. When was that report done and that article written?
The report on the Urban League report on the state of Black America, It was released on Tuesday.
Okay.
In fact, okay. If you go online, you'll see the whole report. I don't know whether they charged to see it. You can kind of read it. The way they have it, you can't really read it. You can see the book. I don't know whether they charge for it, but eventually the report's going to be out there where you don't have to pay for it. But they release excerpts from it.
But it was
released on Tuesday.
Okay, I'll look it up and read. It's just amazing though how I guess years have changed, and nothing has really changed. Dates have changed, but the situation in and of itself hasn't changed. And so as long as we have representation like the Urban League's leader and others, where do we get any kind of justification in the kinds of types of things that we do?
Well, you know, and it's kind of funny that you mention that because, you know, when you have leadership in anything that you're doing, you need vision, you need foresight.
Uh-huh.
And especially if you're dealing with youth, you're dealing with the welfare of a people. And when you see these things printed in black and white, like they printed out, the booklet is a nice colored booklet with all types of graphs and everything. So they did their research. And you see these things haven't really changed. And according to Moriel, since the civil rights era, a lot of the stats have gotten worse. So the only solution that you can come up with is vote. And plus, he stated that, according, and I'll read it again, Moriel chose to release the report in Atlanta, where a concentration of historically black colleges have long represented high achievement among African Americans. In part, the survey shows a declining faith among young blacks that voting can make a difference. So if you see generations of young black folks that's on college campuses now and in the community losing faith in these black elected officials and the voting system in general, that's your only solution to black people is to register to vote for a system that is clearly against them? Is something wrong with those that solution? That doesn't even make common sense.
Really?
But that's the solution that we're getting.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for sharing. I'll listen more.
Thanks for your contribution, brother.
Peace.
Let's go to 646. 646.
Hey, Elliot and Richard, what's happening, man?
Yes, sir.
What's up? Listen, man, it seems as though another cop will get away with killing one of us, and nothing's going to happen. It just seems like they can arbitrarily shoot us and, you know, find some sort of excuse to blame it on us.
You talking about the young man on the lawn?
Excuse me?
You talking about the young man on the lawn?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, at what point in time does the community say enough is enough? I mean, you know, you got to get to the point to where you say enough is enough, man. I mean, this is just becoming one of those things. Every 3-4 months, somebody's getting shot. You know what I mean? And killed.
Well, I don't think it goes. I don't think it goes 3-4 months. You might mean 3 or 4 days.
Well, hey, listen, I'm trying to give it a little bit of a benefit of doubt.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And you know, the thing is, it's always the same narrative. He didn't comply. He was fighting back. He was doing this. He was doing that, man. It's just crazy, man. I mean, you know, to be honest with you, you know, at some point in time, we just going to have to get fed up with it. And if we're not going to get fed up with it, just admit that it is what it is. You know what I mean? That we live in a society where we're not going to be treated fairly or respected, you know? So, I mean, what could one do?
Well,
so, I mean, I don't know, man. I just find it to be very, very disheartening to the fact that, you know, we ain't even talking about all the money that they given these Ukrainians, man. I mean, that right there is unbelievable, man. I think they done already given them over $2 trillion?
Yeah, something like that. Because I think earlier this month they got 13.5 billion, and then a couple of days ago, Biden said he gonna send them another $800 million. You know, they're coming up with all this money, but they don't have, if the conversation of reparations come up, they don't have nothing. Black farmers, the money that was supposed to have been allocated for them to get that was in the budget, they ain't got it. But you don't hear nothing from your representatives. They don't say a mumbling word.
Well, man, you can't, you know, I mean.
Oh, listen, I'm not puzzled by it at all.
Black folks,
yeah,
over white folks.
Listen, I'm not.
I mean, come on, man.
I'm not puzzled by it at all. I just want to make sure I point out the contradiction and ram it home, because a lot of these popular black talk shows, they don't even talk about it.
Right, and they definitely don't hold the black representatives
accountable. Exactly.
It, you know what I mean? Because if anything, the black representation should be saying something in regards to how you giving all this money to a foreign nation, but you can't give any type of money, let alone if you don't want to give reparations, but you can't even give money to communities, neighborhoods, you can't even take care of the student loan crises. You know what I mean? The housing crises and this and that. You know, because if the truth be told, media is really selective in which they speak of. You know what I mean? Or which they report, because ain't nobody really talking about the housing crises in this country. They'll put out their articles about how people making money in real estate, but they damn sure don't talk about all of the money that people losing in real estate and the homelessness and things of that nature. Because, you know, if the truth be told, homelessness in this country is at the highest that it's ever been in years. But nobody never talks about that. But all of the other things, they'll put it out there and make it seem, well, it's not as bad as, you know, it seems. And we just go along with it. But, you know, there's karma. And I don't know if I saw one of the funniest things in the world, I think it was yesterday or the day before, your boy Joe Biden shake your ear, man. Oh, that was hilarious.
Say that again?
That was hilarious. Shake your ear. And now, if that was Trumpy Trumpster shaking their, oh man, it would be never ending on the media.
Shaking hands. Shaking hands with who?
The air, brother. The air.
He was
with the air. It was a video clip on film after he finished saying something, shaking hands. Like he was shaking hands with a person, but it was the air.
Oh.
And you know what I mean?
What's going on there?
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So the thing is, you know, the reality is the man is not really fit to lead the country, and unfortunately is we're in a situation to where as you got a vice president who ain't no damn body want. Nobody want, you know, what's her name, Kamala Harris, to lead this country. Nobody never talks about how she was the first one out. She had one of the lowest percentages of votes and all of that. But, you know, like KBJ, she's a Negro darling. You know what I mean? She's supposed to deem and seen as something special for black folk. Man, we insane, man. We don't get it, man. You know what I mean? We just don't get it. I mean, I find it to become more comical than a little bit, because if you look at what's going on with inflation and all of the other things going on, man, what the hell is the direction of the country going in, man? And the sad thing is, all of these so-called political, you know, knowledgeable individuals, you know, the backers of the Democratic Party and all of that, you know, the one thing that I'm waiting for them to do is put together some sort of messaging to be able to articulate why the Republicans shouldn't get back into office and continue the total destruction of what's going on in this country. I mean, did you hear about what they did last week, the governor did last week with Texas?
Go ahead.
Well, he basically slowed down all of the transportation imports from Mexico and in Texas. He made it some sort of law to where as every truck had to be inspected, which backed up, you know, things so bad that the Mexican people was upset, the Texas people was upset, and eventually he had to basically, you know what I mean, change the order. But the question is, if you got somebody doing that type of dangerous type of sugar on the ice, to commerce in the country, wouldn't you think that that would have been something that the president, the Senate, and Congress should have been able to immediately shut down? And you got people talking about all of this nonsense in regards to inflation and all that's going on. Wouldn't you think that it would be a situation to where, as you know, government is supposed to step in and put a halt to it, which it caused that type of danger that was put forward to the economy of the country? But it seems like nobody's doing anything about it. You know, it's just like they're able to do whatever they choose to do, and we just go along with it. Here it is. I was seeing where this whole CTR nonsense is so crazy. They're going after math books, talking about math books and teaching critical race theory. I mean, these people are really nuts, man. And, you know, unfortunately, nobody's in a position or have shown the political authority to really articulate to the country how crazy this sugar honey iced tea is. So whereby it's continuing.
Well, and when you say to the country, you talking about white America?
I'm talking about white America and black America too.
Well, white America don't want you to listen. The majority of white folks don't want you to be critical about them. So they agree.
Yeah, but
they agree in principle with this critical race theory. They don't want you saying anything about them. They'll tell you they'll tell black folks what they want you to say.
Yeah, but don't you
so
say,
you I mean
you
if you expect white folks to be upset about huh?
No, but don't you think if we're so called free blacks, we should have the right to articulate you know, what our position is and what the history
well, that,
of the
that's,
country
that's
has
if,
been towards us.
That's if you're a
if
citizen.
Free black.
That's if you're a citizen. We talked before. Black folks might consider themselves citizens.
Elliot,
white folks don't really consider you a full citizen. You're not.
Hey, Elliot, me and you know that, but the average Negro don't know that.
Well,
out of 10 Negroes, only 2 may know that. But the other 8 think they're free citizens. Think that they got a position in this country. I mean, you had a Negress on television this week saying that KBJ is the embodiment of what the slave wanted to be able to sit on the Supreme Court. You believe that madness? She in front of but national television had the nerve to say that this is what the slave dreamed of. To be on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, well, that might be what they believe. You know, black folks celebrating, some black folks celebrating a black person getting a job. And she's on a court, supposed to be the highest court in this land, with 2 men that have been accused of sexual assault. I don't know about the rest of them. They might have did other things. But I'm talking about 2 men that was openly accused by credible witnesses of sexual assault. That last guy that went on the court, the white guy, and Clarence Thomas, both of them was accused by credible witnesses of sexually assaulting women. And they're on this highest court in the land. So, I mean, the highest court, to who? What difference does it make?
Oh, no, I agree with you.
Oh, no, I understand, but I'm just throwing that out there.
Oh, it's a contradiction that is absolutely mind-boggling if the truth be told. I mean, it's like, you know, unfortunately, sometimes I wonder if black people got a clue on what's being done to them, how they're being manipulated, how they're being bamboozled, how they're being hoodwinked, how they just basically being treated like bubbling fools. I mean, it's absolutely craziness. And it seems as though, if the truth be told, we're oblivious to it. We just go along and get along for what? What is being gained? I don't understand What is being gained by our acceptance of this type of treatment? I don't get it. I mean, I ain't even gonna lie to you. Sometimes I'm
well, everybody's not accepting it. It's a perfect example. It was our first guest this evening. Everybody's not accepting it, and you don't see the work that's being done by these other folks. You just see the assimilationists on television, a lot of times on radio. That's who you see. They'll keep those people in front of you to give you the illusion that not only that you're included, but the illusion that that things is all right and you're moving forward.
Well, you know, to be honest with you, man, radio has become an absolute joke. I mean, the Carl Nelson show is a regurgitating talk of basic madness. I mean, you got the same group of people that's on a monthly basis talking the same foolishness. And, I mean, there's only really one person I enjoy that comes on there, and that's Gerald Horn, because, you know, Gerald Horn is a truth teller. And the unfortunate thing is there's a lot of other people that he could have come on that could speak about issues facing the community and things of that nature, and he just doesn't have them come on, you know? But, hey, man, it is what it is. I mean, I never understand why he's never had William Dougherty on there. I mean, he would be a great guest. You know, I never understand why he's even had, you know, some of the other, you know, political people that come on. Now, I'll tell you one thing. You know who has a pretty good, but it's a Negro-peen American love fest, but I like him because he's probably one of the best interviews in the business, the Tavis Smiley. I mean, one thing, Tavis Smiley has some pretty decent guests on his program, but you know they're all basically, you know, democratic tilts. You know, they are basically for the Democratic Party, and you know, us being, you know, a part of that system because we feel as though that's the only way we're gonna survive in this country, and you know, it is what it is. But I mean, hey man, the bottom line, we better figure it out.
I hate to do this, but a curiosity question. In the next, and we heard with Brother Nambi, he said 20% is opting out of the Democratic Party, and the Democratic and Republican Party. And we heard Moriel say that the young see no engagement in voting, no benefit in voting. If those groups went to the Republican Party, would the structural statistics that Elliot read, would they change?
What would change?
Would those numbers change?
Numbers in regards to what?
The Urban League's report.
I haven't read the Urban League report. I really don't know too much about the Urban League other than I think they're full of sugar, honey, ice tea. I'm getting ready to answer your question. I'm going to answer your question.
Let me, because you said you haven't heard, because Elliot ran off some numbers from the report that just came out. So if we just dealt with those numbers, and I'm assuming you're saying you didn't hear those numbers.
So what were the numbers?
I'm not going to. I'll just read a couple
of
these.
Just give me a few of them.
Yeah.
It
says the Urban League says the median household income for black people in the U.S. is 37% lower than that of white folks.
Yeah.
The index shows that the average income for a household, a black household, is $43,862, 37% less than the average white household of $69,823, among other things, that shows a huge disparity. And Moriel stated that these numbers change so little and so slowly, it tells me that this institutional disparity based on race seems to be built into American society.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You do?
So with those number, if those groupings, the 20% that Brother Namby mentioned that opt out of the, and that was speaking towards Maryland, of the Democratic Republican Party, and Morial making an assessment that the young people are not voting, are saying that they don't see any future in voting. If those groupings move to the Republican Party, would those numbers change?
Nah, numbers wouldn't change if they went to the Republican Party. They would probably get worse if okay. they went to the so, Republican Party.
I was just a curiosity question.
No, I mean, what you think they would get better if black folks went to the Republican Party?
No. But sometimes I hear the inflection about the Democratic Party, like the party structure.
What the Democratic Party is? The Democratic Party, I'll use an analogy like this. The Democratic Party is a rapist who used lube. That's all. That's all the Democratic Party is. They don't do anything other than protect their white interests and make it seem like they're protecting black interests. Why do you think nothing's changed in regards to the George Floyd Act, the Voting Rights Act, anything that will put black people in a position to have any type of authority over white folk? Listen to the words clearly. Any type of position to place them in authority to have governance over white folks. They ain't gonna do nothing like that. They're not going to go along with that as a Democratic Party, but they'll make you think that they will. But they won't. I mean, just take into consideration the Civil Rights Act of 1965. Here it is. It's 2022. So that means it's over 50-some years. And the positions and the conditions haven't really changed politically for black folks without the approval of white folks, making it so that the so-called laws could be implemented to restrict what they're using now, gerrymandering and voter suppression. Now, if they had passed the civil rights laws that were put forward by the illustrious, I got beat upside my head, Negro, John Lewis, then there would be things in place where they couldn't gerrymander and they couldn't do what they're doing with voter suppression if that bill was signed. But they're not going to do that because they know if Republicans are in power, the part of white privilege, they will benefit from it. So, I mean, ain't nobody unfortunately going to call them out about it. I mean, let's call a spade a spade, but that's really the truth of it. Ain't nobody going to call them out with it and say to them, well, this is what the deal is, you know? And that's the most serious contradiction that we have to deal with and that we face. You know, we make it seem that the Democratic Party is the Republican Party, but like I said, they just a kind of rapist. You know what I mean? They just gonna use lube. They ain't gonna do anything to make your life really that much better. I mean, think about all of the things that they said 2 years ago to get you to vote for them. Now, Richard and Elliot, could you answer this question? Do you feel that they have fulfilled their promises that they made in regards to what they were going to do to get your vote?
I don't pay attention.
Yeah, I don't even focus in on that, to be honest.
No, but I'm saying, if even as someone who don't pay attention or focus in on that, you would, if having to answer that question, you would say no, right?
I would say, yeah, but getting what you're getting right now. I
mean, yeah, but they never, you know, whether it was just...
Yeah, but the point is, they never fulfill it. They never honor it, but they always leave you in a situation with a hope and a prayer that you think that they will. That's what I'm trying to say. It's like they just gave you. It's like they play you. They toy with you. And the unfortunate thing is we don't recognize or understand that we're being manipulated and toyed with and played with. We just go along because we scared of that so-called Republican boogeyman.
Well, the media, especially now, the media is a power, and we're gonna move on because I want to get this last call in. But the media is a powerful tool. The media is a powerful tool, and if you have, especially now in the past 30, 40, 50 years, if you have black faces, quote unquote, on white power, that gives the people the illusion that things is changing. And the ones that's in those positions help put forth that illusion because they don't call out the contradiction. They never do.
Never.
So, you know, we have to use any tool we have to not only call out the contradiction, but to advocate organizing against this type of stuff, period. Whether you got black or sure, we know we got to organize against these white incursions, but if they're getting black help, then they have to be exposed. You can't just let them say what they want to say because that's damaging. This stuff has been damaging to our people.
Hey, just keep on doing what you're doing as far as media go. It's like I said. It's like I said to a brother the other day. If you're going to be black media, at least try to speak the truth. You know what I mean? I mean, some of these cats, man, they don't speak the truth or they follow through an agenda. I know everybody get mad at old Roly-Poly, but the reality is this. Roly-Poly trying to get paid, man. That's all Roly-Poly trying to do. He just trying to get a whole... or some of that advertisement money.
Well, he's no different than these black Miss Leadership class. They're just trying to get paid.
Not at all.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. You know, it is, and I'm not, all I'm saying is this. Whenever I speak about Roland, I'm strictly about, I like the way that he trying to get paid. I can't get mad at his hustle, because the one thing about his hustle is, he's trying to make it seem that if you go along with the game, just pay me for me going along with the game, and at least he will call him out for not paying him. But I mean, if the cat gets his money, he probably gonna be more dangerous than anybody who's been in black media, because now he'll really have the necessary capital to do the type of dirty deeds that he's capable of doing. Because believe me, man, you got a lot of people who back this guy, man. You know,
Let me move on.
But go ahead. Talk to you.
Hotel. Right. Let's see, before we go to our last caller, Richard, and bring
him in.
Come on. You just woke up, man. You got 1 minute, and then we're going to the last caller. You got 1 minute.
Oh,
go ahead.
Yeah. Just tell the people from the Mason town that I talked to somebody in Memphis. That a high profile cat that know what's going on, so he go be getting in contact with him.
Okay. I'll do that. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Yes, sir.
let me move on. Before we go to 215, let me read this, Richard. And we all familiar with it, but it just makes things clear for our people. Because, you know, we put a lot of stock in this 64 Civil Rights Act, which has been changed now, is the Equality Act. So everybody's involved. But let me take it all the way back to a lot of the periods that you focus in on, Richard, because this is when the games really started to be played. In March of 1857, the Supreme Court issued a 7-2 decision against Dred Scott. In an opinion written by Justice Roger Taney, the court ruled that people of African descent are not included and were not intended to be included under the word citizens in the Constitution, and can therefore claim none of the rights and privileges which that instrument provided for and secured to the citizens of the United States. Taney supported his rulings with an extended survey of the American state and local laws from the time of the Constitution's drafting in 1787 that purported to show that a perpetual and impassionate barrier was intended to be erected between the white race and the one that was reduced to slavery. Because of the court's rule that Scott was not an American citizen, he was also not a citizen of any state, and according could never establish the diversity of citizenship that Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution required for U.S. federal court to be able to exercise jurisdiction over a case. So, according to Taney in 1857 and the court, according to the original designers of this Constitution, black folks was never intended to be citizens. Right, Richard?
Yeah.
Here's the games. After the Civil War was fought and black folks saved this union and pulled their chestnuts out the fire, here's where the game started, the three-card molly. The Civil Rights Act of 1866 was the first United States federal law to define citizenship and affirm that all citizens are equally protected by the law. It was mainly intended in the wake of the Civil War to protect the civil rights of persons of African descent born or brought to the United States. It also said that any citizen it also stated that they had the same right that a white citizen has to make and enforce contracts, to sue or be sued, to give evidence in court, and inherit, purchase, sell, lease, hold, or convey real estate or personal property. Additionally, the act guaranteed that all citizens the full and equal benefit of all laws and proceedings for the security of person or property as enjoyed by white citizens. So that 1866 act, Richard, supposedly solidified your right as a citizen, period, in this country. Right or wrong?
Right.
And it was supposed to overturn the court's decision. The 14th Amendment was supposed to bolster that. Now, I don't know why you had to bolster it, because those acts basically said what they said. But the 14th Amendment stated, it granted the 14th Amendment in the U.S. Constitution, adopted in 1868. It guaranteed or granted citizenship and equal civil and legal rights to African Americans and enslaved people who had been emancipated after the Civil War. The 15th Amendment to the Constitution prohibits the federal government and each state from denying or abridging the citizens' right to vote based on race, color, or previous condition of servitude. Now, that's talking about black folks. Now, here we go. The Civil Rights Act of 1875 is also known as the Act to Protect All Persons in the United States, their civil rights. This landmark legislation was created when slavery had been abolished, but discrimination against blacks continued. It guaranteed equality for African-American men and women by prohibiting discrimination based on color. Now, wait a minute, Richard. Why was this Act of 1875 put forth? Your rights were supposed to have been already guaranteed. What is this games being played? Now, hold it. Let me read that. Just a brief of that Act of 1875. It says, all persons, regardless of color, previous condition of servitude, if you were slaves, were entitled to full and equal employment or accommodations in inns, public conveyances, land, water, theater, or other public amusements. No citizen could be denied the right to serve on grand or petite juries. Those who break that law are fined between $500 or $1,000. Okay, whatever. In 1883, the United States Supreme Court ruled the Civil Rights Act of 1875 unconstitutional. That decision to overturn the act led to legalization of discrimination and segregation and a set of laws known as Jim Crow. So wait a minute. You already had your total rights supposed to have been granted in 1866 under the Civil Rights Act and the 14th Amendment 2 years and 15th Amendment 2 years later. So they came up with an 1875 Civil Rights Act, basically repeating the same thing of the 1866 Act. But then in 1883, the Supreme Court overturned that act, which led to Jim Crow. Wait a minute, Richard. I must stop there because that's critical race theory. No, that's critical race facts. That these people constantly playing games with black folks. The only thing different now than it was then, that you had black elected officials that was actively fighting against this stuff. And now you have black elected officials that, according to our last guest, want to get paid. That's the big difference.
And we we have to continue with those facts being true, have to individually say, therefore, because there has to be a conclusion. I mean, all those things being true, therefore, and it seems that we, with Sister McKinney say, we are standing on the sidelines, not even knowing all those things being true, we don't even say as individuals or as a group, therefore, because that means a conclusion has to be made based off of that, that we're not making.
Let me grab our last call to 215. 215.
Yeah,
215. I don't know what the 215 is going on. Let me go one more time. 215. 215, are you there?
Oh yeah, hey, Ellie. How you doing, my brother?
You ready?
Hey, Ellie and Richard. How you doing, good brothers?
Okay.
All right. Yeah, I don't even know where to begin yet. Brother Jay made a good point about the police situation. Now, you know, brother, our late great brother, Brother Mo, made that comment. Yeah, he said, Joe, and he said, because he was quoting Brother Malcolm, he said, we'll get it to a point in this country where black men and women, especially black men, are going to get tired of these white cops killing our people, man. I mean, if it's going to end, we're going to have to put an end to it. And by any means necessary, because this stuff just can't keep on continuing, man. Every time you turn around, brothers is getting shot by these white devils, man. Getting shot in the back of the head. Women getting abused. Like you said, that 70-something-year-old woman getting abused by them devil cops, man. This stuff just can't keep on. And it only happens to black people, man. They may do it to Latinos every now and then, but it's primarily to black people, man. Just abuse our people, man. I mean, a routine traffic stop to a brother in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Patrick Mallory. He turns into his get his brains blown out, shot in the back of the head. He had no weapons and stuff because he wouldn't let go of his taser. I mean, come on, man. Come on with this foolishness, man. This stuff has got to stop, Elliot. I'm sorry, man. It's just got to stop some kind of way. You know, it just got to stop. But it can't keep on continuing. These white double cops, they got God-given right to just shoot our people down, bruise us, beat us, and nothing should be done about it. That's bullshit. It got to end at some point, man. It has to, okay, Elliot? And Richard, I have to get that off my chest, man, because I'm just fed up, man. Just enough is enough, you know. I saw them protesting out in Grand Rapids, I think it was, Elliot. They showed our people out there. He had a few whites joining them, but you know how they go, Elliot. They show and tell, you know. See, but like I said, where's their staying power? Like you said, when these other brothers have been getting killed, Breonna Taylor and all, where are all these white folks around the country, you know, going back to their communities, demanding these white bigots be held accountable, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's basically what it comes down to that. But let me say this real quick, because I know y'all pressed for time. On Mark Mariel, yeah, he was on Shop and Show today, you know, with the Urban League report that you was talking to Brother Jay about a few minutes ago. And, you know, like I said, LA, and of course, Clyburn was on there prior to Mariel coming on there. And you know, the great Dr. Claude Anderson, Elliot, and Brother Richard, he said that, a few years ago, he said that the medium income for black families, and this is a daunting figure that our people should really pay close attention to. It's a failure of that damn Democrat Party and their twin brother, the Republican Party, and the BS and the free card Molly, like you said, Elliot, they play on black people. He's, according to Dr. Claude Anderson, who's an intelligent, brilliant brother, he said that the medium income of black America has not got, he said it hasn't got significantly better since the end of the Civil War. And he said this a few years ago. What did that tell you, Elliot? You know, that fits right in with the Urban League report. And you said Al Jazeera had comment on it. Didn't you say that, Elliot?
Yeah, the report was in Al Jazeera. You know, okay. One other thing that report don't mention, but that it should be talked about, is it stated that the median income for the black household was $43,000. That's on average. And the median income for the white household was $69,000.
Right.
But the only thing difference in that picture is that median income for the black household generally would include a man and a woman.
Exactly.
Making $43,000. But the white household, that's one white man making the $69,000. Because generally in white households, you ain't got two people necessarily working.
That's correct.
Those white women are home, soccer moms or whatever. They're home most of the day.
Exactly, exactly.
So that median black household would be two people working to put together a salary of $43,000. While
correct.
The white household is one white man working, generally making $69,000. So you're really, that statistic is a little deceiving because it's just really not taking into account the whole dynamic of the quote-unquote household.
And see, Brother Ellie, I'm glad you raised that issue because, see, again, it shows you when I heard these punk-ass white boys crying the blues about when they don't get a job, you know how the white punk white boys is, when something don't go their way, they start crying reverse racism. And some of our people dumb enough to go for that dumb-ass stuff, you know. Statistics show, in spite of the, and I say this clearly without any hesitation, in spite of the true black token faces that you see in some of these white corporate companies, Fortune 500 companies, the standard bearer for a Fortune 500 company is a white male, in some cases white women, but it's still a white male. You might get a black woman here and there or a black man, like I think the one that runs one of the cruise ship lines or whatever, but for the most part, it's still white males. These devils still are the ones making the big money on these jobs, whether it's in the private or public sector, but they got the audacity to cry the blues whenever something don't go their way. They show you the sick, racist, vile, sick devil mentality these people have. They don't want black people to have nothing. And I've been saying this on terrestrial radio for years. If these white devil bigots could charge black people for the air they breathe, they would have you. They would have an oxygen tank up to your face, charge you by the minute. They don't want you to get nothing in this country. This is how sick these people are, man. And some of our people are so dumb enough, they can't realize. And like you said to Brother Jay and to Brother Richard in the audience a while ago, Elliot, and our Mark Moriel and Clyburn and these clowns can keep telling our people, just vote. Like Brother Rob said years ago, our late brother Rob said, Ellie, you know he said it. He said, we didn't vote our way into this white supremacy madness, and we damn sure ain't going to vote our way out of it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's very clear. I mean, it's going to have to be other ways to deal with this situation besides just voting. Not to say voting is not a weapon, because Malcolm says it's a tool, but it's a tool that we have to use wisely, not to just become slaves to either Democrat or Republican Party. We've got to be more wiser than that. And, you know, like, when I was talking to you and Brother Nami and Brother Brandon when they was on earlier about Clyburn, see, to show you how Clyburn is a clown and a disgrace. Now, Sharpton brought up, and I want the listeners to hear this real carefully, to show you how they play games with our people. Now Clyburn brought up, Sharpton brought up the fact about the police situation. He said, well, Congressman Clyburn, the Democrat Party has a chance to get some of the Build Back Better plan that was stymied by Manchin and Sinema and everything. You know, if the Democrats can just come to a compromise, stop the infighting, and maybe come to some kind of compromise, get some of the things done through reconciliation, that's the word he used, reconciliation. he says, and stuff before the midterms. And so Claiborne said, yeah, I agree with all that, Reverend Al and everything. So they went, you know, back and forth with that. And then Sharpton hit him with the police thing. He said, well, as you know, Congressman, the young man was just killed in Grand Rapids, Michigan the other week, and I'm going to do the eulogy at his funeral and stuff like that. And, you know, once again, a young black man is gunned down at the hands of police and everything, a young black man. So he asked Claiborne about the president. He said, you know, one of the disappointments, Congressman Claiborne, is the fact that this police bill has not passed and the president didn't do it. So this with Claiborne exposed. See, sometimes, LA, it's best to keep your mouth shut and expose this with a fool yard and a clown yard. But see, again, like you said, Elliot, and this ties up to this right here, these black politicians are no different than white politicians. They think black people stupid. They think we don't listen to what they say. Now, Claiborne got right up there and said to Sharpton, he said, well, you know, Reverend Al, I agree with you. He said, because I've been saying for the longest that even though Manchin and Sinema, you know, help blocking the bill, the president, and now Claiborne told the truth about this, but see, with a thing called Molly coming at, because he's not doing it. He says, President Biden, in spite of the fact that they blocking that bill, Sinema and Manchin, he said he can use the executive order to push some kind of strong police reform that can hold these racist, violent cops accountable. He says, I've been telling the president, and he said, but he has not did it. So I'm saying, first thing went to my mind, Elliot, and this goes back to what you have said for the longest, Elliot, this Congressional Black Caucus, which Claiborne is part of, they are a large body of black politicians. Like you said, if they call a news conference, the media, whether it's the white media, whatever, they will have to attend that conference. If Claiborne had black people's interests at heart, they will put Joe Biden's rotten ass on the spot. But they don't do that. Like you said, all they got to do is call a news conference and say, look, President Biden, you said that we got your back, that you got our back, and don't forget I helped turn your candidacy around down in South Carolina. That's the reason why you're in the White House now. We demand that you use executive. Forget about Manchin and Sinema. We want you to use executive order because he has that within his powers, the president, to push police, strong police reform that can hold these cops accountable, like getting rid of that immunity thing, all that kind of stuff. He said, but according to Claiborne, Biden has the power to do so. So I'm asking, so I'm scratching my head saying, well, damn it, why don't y'all demand that Biden do it? Don't get on Sharpton's show with that nonsense about that he should do it. Demand that he do it. Hold his ass accountable so the world can see just how rotten he is. So when to turn y'all down and say he not going to do it, then black people know once and for all what a devil he is, what a fraud he is. You understand what I'm saying, Elliot? This would put Biden on the spot. Once and for all, they not going to do it because they play games with our people, man. You know what I mean? That's why I'm watching this thing today. I say, Buster Claiborne, you are fully, you know what, man, you know?
Well, I mean, we was just talking about that. Now, the media is a powerful tool. Now, you're going to go on Sharpton. Everybody don't watch Al Sharpton show.
Exactly.
You're going to go on Al Sharpton and say, well, he can do this and he don't. You can hold a press conference and the whole world will see you putting him on the spot.
Exactly.
Not the couple of thousand people that might have watched Sharpton show that particular day. He's only saying that so he can curry favor with Sharpton. Then Sharpton will have his show on Monday or that weekly show and say, oh, Jim Claiborne said this, that, and the other. Come on, man. They're playing games.
And that's my point. They play the three-card Molly game with black people. They keep playing this game. And Elliot, two more points and I'll get off. See, Elliot, when Brother Nami and Brandon and Brother Brandon was on, they made a good point. And they go back to what Brother Richard said about the political entrepreneurs. He said the Democrat Party, these Negroes that's pushing and advocates for the Democrat Party, they've got rich while the mass of our people stay in poverty. And two examples come to mind, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. There are as many others besides them, but they are two of the main ones. Both of them guys are millionaires. Sharpton and Jesse are both millionaires. You know what I mean? You got Stacey Abrams down there in Georgia. See, these people become rich by being tools of the Democrat Party, and well-paid tools, by the way, but the mass of our people continue to lavish in poverty. You see what I'm saying? See, this is what I'm saying. We got to stop playing these games with these people. These people are living large, man. They live in large. They got big bank accounts, while the mass of black folks can barely make ends meet, man. This stuff has got to stop, brother. We got to stop calling these people out, man. And lastly, Elliot, because I know y'all pressed for time, and I get off with this. You know, Elliot, to show you how, like you said, the media is strong. And see, you know how some of our people, they don't realize how they've been influenced by the media. because they so in denial because this white media, like Minister Farrakhan said, white people's racism is manifested through their news media. And like Malcolm said years ago, the media is white media make you hating your enemies, I mean hating your friends and loving your enemies. Well, case in point of this Ukraine situation. Brother Elliot, I have talked to black folks over the, I got like a little, a kind of like a, I guess you could say, what, for lack of a better word, and Brother Richard, some I got kind of like a reading or kind of a synopsis on this whole Ukraine situation with Russia. And Elliot, black folks that should know better, they don't even realize how they've been manipulated. I don't know how, Brother Elliot and Richard, and, this, and I say this in closing, I don't know how many black folks that I thought was conscious, and I'm not still, they, I'm not bad-mouthed, like, they're still good people, but they don't even realize how they've been manipulated. They, I mean, I'm talking about some revolutionary black folks and some that's real conscious Afrocentric. They have shown so much empathy for these white Ukrainian people, how it's a shame and how Putin is a thug and how he should need to be taken out, this and that. And they see how he's just killing them, and they see these, and they show TV and these dead Ukrainians laying on the street or whatever like that. But guess what, Elliot? These same black men and women, they don't show that same sympathy. And they, I've met, have, in all the times that the Zionist state of Israel has killed innocent Palestinian brothers and sisters and women and children, I've never heard them say that kind of stuff about them. I've never heard them say that what's going on in Africa and Somalia and Ethiopia when the United States dropped drones and stuff, especially during the Obama administration, killing black folks in Africa and Somalia, and matter of fact, as we speak now, because Biden has carried on the same policy. I swear, Brother Ellen Richard, those same black folks, they don't seem to show that same empathy for these people that have been dying at the hands of United States imperialism. But for some reason, they so bent out of shape about how what's going on in Ukraine. I'm saying myself, I'm scratching my head. I'm saying, how the hell can you be so sympathetic towards all these white folks that they say dying over Ukraine and stuff, but you can't show that for Palestinian men, women, and children. You can't show it for your own African women, men, women, and children, Muslim women and children, to Africa, Somalia, Sudan, whatever. You didn't show that same sympathy for Rwanda, which was instigated by the United States and Britain and all these European powers. You didn't show that same sympathy for Rwanda when the Tutsis and the Hutsis was over there killing each other. But you got all this sympathy for all these white folks. You understand what I'm saying, Elliot?
Yeah.
I mean, it just boggles the mind. And they don't, and when I tell them that how they've been, they say, "Oh, Joe, that's not right." Now I feel for them. I mean, they say it so faintly, Elliot. Oh, I feel for our African people. I feel for our Palestinian people. But Elliot, they don't say it with that same vigor when it comes to the white folks in Ukraine. You see what I'm saying, Elliot? When it comes to Ukraine, oh, they all bent out of shape. They need to kill Putin. They need to take him out. He's a thug. He this and that. He's like Hitler. And I'm saying to myself, how is he like Hitler? Ain't these white folks over here, these white presidents like Hitler? Ain't all these other white bigots in Israel, these Zionist leaders, ain't they like Hitler? But they don't say that about them, but Putin all of a sudden is the boogeyman. And lastly, Elliot, it goes back to what Brother Nomni and Brother Brandon was saying when it was on earlier. See, that's that boogeyman. See, black people always get caught up in that boogeyman stuff. Like Brother Brandon said down in Maryland, you can make the case, like he said, that the Democrats ones is the boogeyman down there. You know what I mean? So we can always get caught up in that Republican boogeyman, that Putin is the boogeyman. Certain white folks is the boogeyman. Man, in other words, Elliot, and put in simple words, your white devil is better than my white devil. And that's what black people get caught up in this city between the Democrat and Republicans. You got the Bob Brady faction, you got the Billy Meehan faction on the Republican side. So you get black people on terrestrial radio arguing about which white man is better, your white man or my white man. And we keep going for that foolishness. And to go back, Elliot, to what Malcolm said on your clip you and Richard play. You know what I mean? You got liberals and so-called conservatives from both parties. They use black people as political football. And we keep falling for the same three-card-molly trick over and over again. What's the definition of insanity, Brother Elliot? They keep doing the same thing over and over again, expect a different result. It's like if you and Richard bring your head up against the wall and blood keep coming out and you be wondering why your head's busted open. Well, if you keep busting your head up against the wall, you're going to get the same result. Until you stop banging your head against the wall, then your head won't be spouting blood out. But as long as you keep doing the same thing, you're going to get the same result. I mean, it's not rocket science. Just common sense, bro. That's all common sense. That's all.
Thanks,
I know it's you pressed for time, but I get off now, Ellie, and I'll put me on mute and I'll listen to the remaining couple minutes if y'all are on.
Thanks for your contribution.
You're welcome.
Richard, we come to the end of another program, man. Before we leave this evening, want to give the lineup for Time for an Awakening Media, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. Always interesting topics, guests, and dialogue. on African Perspectives. That's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. later on Monday evenings, Black Therapy Central, with host Dr. Mawir Kambine and Dr. Kamal Kambine. The first and third Mondays of the month, scheduled from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations with host Brother Jamoke. On Tuesday, 8 to 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesday, It's Our Time, the Black Farmers Program from 8 to 9. And from 9 to 10, Black Agenda Report with Dr. David Muhammad on Friday, 8 until Time for an Awakening is back. And then on Saturdays, from 7 to 9 p.m., the Elders of Sankofa with host Brother Alfonso Watkins. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. A lively discussion as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. Children, soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of. Fireman.
children.